Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK, Historic Fisk University. And Commander Chuck will be back with us here shortly to give us the latest traffic update and let you know how it's looking on your way home. Now let's talk weather. This is probably, I think, ask yes or no. I think, isn't this the worst first official day we've had that it feels like the seasons have truly changed?
Yeah, yes. This is it.
Yeah, I believe. So, knowing that that's the case, you know, we're going to be passing information on as it develops during the winter months here on the station. And we'll have our traffic reports from Commander Chuck. One of the things that is consistent with all of this is just slow down some. You know, you'll get there, but just slow down. You know, it's hard to be patient, but you have to be. Might be in your car sitting and waiting in traffic. You know, things are, this will be today's first drive home for Nashville. So, you know, you can't do Leadfoot. You can't do it. It's going to be a wintry mix for us tonight. And that's mostly over the northeast portion of Middle Tennessee, who could experience about an inch of snow and a little touch of ice for them. The wintry mix is going to continue into tomorrow. And again, for folks northwest of here, they will be dealing with it more so than we are here in the Nashville area. Here's how it looks for us for the rest of this day. We are going to have that rain continue for this evening. 100% chance for rain to continue. We never got anywhere close to what we were supposed to get to 40 today, but we just didn't quite make it. But tonight, the low is going to be around 34. If we can just stay above 32, I think we can make it and get on the other side. Tomorrow, 37. And as we ease closer and closer to the holidays, it's starting to feel a whole lot more like that time of year. Oh, yeah, it's beginning to feel a lot like it, that time of year. And our chances for rain for tomorrow drop to about 30%. And it warms up. It starts easing up. The temperature starts easing up. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. 37 for tomorrow. Some flurries tomorrow night, and 54 on Friday. Glad to see you, 54. And we're looking even warmer than that on the weekend. Now, why couldn't that temperature be the temperature that it was for homecoming last weekend?
We could have used that for sure.
When we were fudge sickles out there. It was so cold. And, you know, it might not have felt like that if I would have only kept my coat on. I had a jacket on, and I put my coat in the trunk, you know, thinking it's going to warm up.
It was something else out
there. And can I just say, I listened to you. You said, oh, it's going to warm up, Shaggy.
I thought it was.
Well, I'm not listening to your forecast anymore.
It was warming the sun.
Yeah.
But the wind was blowing.
So immediately, as soon as the sun was behind the building. And I don't even know if I'm going to listen to the weathermen and women anymore. Because they didn't say anything about 100% chance for rain today. I don't remember them saying that.
No, I know they said something about the drizzle this afternoon, possibly turning.
Yeah, drizzle. This is more than a full-blown drizzle. It's raining. It's been raining and cool and damp all day long. So, knowing that that's the case, it's 36 in the city. So you all be sure to just slow down, you know, take your time. You'll be there. You'll be home a few minutes later than normal, but just slow down so you can get there. And that's really, at the end of the day, that's what's up. Now, X, we have today and Sunday our last two live shows until after the holiday.
Yeah, that's correct.
So we get to take some time off. The show's going to air, though. We loaded with content. Next Wednesday, you know what I'm going to be doing.
What's that, cooking?
Yes, Lord. Because unanimously my family said, yes, Mama. Yes, Auntie. Yes, they all said. And I'm like, okay. I don't have to wonder if they're going to like it or not. Oh, that is not the issue.
Okay.
That is not the issue. This is like the perfect world. I'm cooking in somebody's larger kitchen than mine.
Okay.
One of my family members is buying all the meats.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
And another one is buying. So all I have to do is
just cook.
Yes.
Okay.
No money. Just cook it. I got you, baby. So, and I have a few little helpers I'm going to be,
okay.
Pays to have grandkids.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm trying to make this a family-friendly
okay.
event. And then, of course, you know, I always have the nibblers that are happy to sample everything.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's going to be good to see my family. And it's not that I don't see them, but, you know, everybody's busy.
Yeah.
You know, folks are busy. They're going here and there to work and school and what have you. And, you know, I'm busy and they're busy and their children are busy. So be a chance to sit down and just, you know, catch up with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Or as my family will be sitting there with their cell phones, checking their status and texting and emailing. So, you know, but we'll be in the same room as they all do all that.
So no posting complaints about food.
Oh, no. Not my crew. My crew is not going to complain. No, no. See, they are already.
Yeah, okay.
There is no complaining about my food. What? You... Do you think?
No, you might be the police.
See, don't. I'm an old school cook. I've been around for a long time, and you know all the old school cooks. Y'all know how Mama Nim said and did and Granny. No, I don't
like cranberry sauce.
Well, don't get it.
I'm just saying that's what
they might say it, but you know, don't get it. Leave it there and quit wasting it because that costs money. That's, you know, my favorite line. That costs money. Well, you know, the children, it's hard to tell what they like. If they don't see Mom and Daddy doing it, they're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if mamas and daddies don't eat vegetables or don't eat this or that or this or that, the kids aren't either. So they're not eating the cranberry sauce and kids aren't. I've never not liked it. It's always been, you know, good to me.
It's always good.
Yeah. Well, right now, anything would be good.
Yeah.
So why are we talking about food? Anyway, you got big plans?
I think we're going to go to Alabama.
Okay.
That's where Regina's mother is and her sister and brother.
Your mother-in-law.
Yeah.
You'll be taking out the trash and on your best behavior.
That, yeah.
Best behavior.
And then from there, I may drive up to North Carolina.
Oh, to see your cousins?
Yes.
Okay.
That's where my mother will be.
Oh, really? Please give her my Thanksgiving.
I shall.
Best, my wishes for her.
Yep.
She's a wonderful woman. Well, you got a big family plans. That's good.
Yeah.
And
all I got to do is get there.
That's really what's up. Now, Howard Ross is going to be with us in a few minutes. His book. Now, you may remember him. He was on, when was it? A couple of months back. When was that? During the summer, maybe?
I think so.
Okay. And I told him we were going to circle back. Howard J. Ross is a lifelong social justice advocate and the founding partner of Cook Ross Incorporated. And he has carved his niche in corporate culture change, leadership development, diversity, and inclusion. So you may remember that discussion that we had with him. He's also a best-selling author. His book, maybe some of you have, Reinventing Diversity and Everyday Bias. And for you all that are everyday biased, it might be a good buy for you to buy that to help you, because some of you need it.
Most people don't believe that there is.
Well, that's because they're just so blinded by
just
it.
Just pick yourself up by your bootstraps and just...
Yeah, yeah, if you got some straps or some boots, you know, don't you remember those stories? Or maybe you're not old enough. My daddy used to say, we were so poor. We say, how poor were you? That we had to put cardboard in the bottom of our shoes, but we didn't even have soles in our shoes. I'm like, yes, daddy, y'all was poor back in the day. But, I mean, he's of that era, that World War II, you know, the greatest generation era. So that's how poor they were. And, you know, they learned how to make do with what they had.
Yeah.
But I don't know about today's people. I don't know. So maybe change will come in our lifetime.
Change is coming. Because as I look at the crawler on the TV, Donald Trump has secluded himself in the White House somewhere.
Well,
he's not speaking to anybody. He's blaming everybody for what's going on.
Yeah, he's having a temper tantrum.
Wow.
Let him go to your room. Go on in your room, son. Shut the door.
Today, Dems flip another GOP House seat.
Well, there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
But one of the things that has been quite disturbing, before I digress, is California.
Oh, my gosh.
Seeing the people that they're standing and the fire is all around. That must be as close to being like in hell of anything.
Somebody called it apocalyptic.
Yeah, totally. It's like, you know, you feel like God is forsaken you. And I know there's a whole lot of people that are questioning their
faith,
their relationship with the Father and think he doesn't care. And I certainly hope that the community of faith steps up in a major way so the people don't feel that, you know, God doesn't care.
Yeah.
Because
over 7,000 homes.
You know, just that whole city, paradise, was the opposite of what happened.
Yeah.
There was no paradise.
Yeah,
it's gone. The whole thing is gone.
They said that was one of the last places left in California where a person could live on a fixed income.
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's completely gone. So their sorrow and sadness and grief for their losses are overwhelming. And so I think this Thanksgiving, we certainly ask, thus us that we're not in that situation, have a lot to be thankful for. And as you sit down to your dinners and enjoy your family and friends with all your things around you that the Lord has blessed you with, you know, think of those people who have absolutely nothing. They have nothing. And, you know, we're grateful that we have organizations like the Red Cross and so many of the others out there that stand in the gap to bless. And, of course, the firefighters that are coming from all over the nation to support them. So as you would be complaining on your way home this afternoon or complaining about something, just imagine how it would be if your town was burned down or your neighborhood and everything you lost was gone. Just something for you to think about for a second. Now, we'll go back to where you put the comma in the sentence.
Oh, yeah.
Because, see, once you open up Pandora's box on that man, I just have a hard time, you know, man. Then it just automatically rolls off of everybody's tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that he has that effect on the people? But, you know, he's had quite a war with CNN from day one. You noticed that, right?
Come January, it's going to get worse.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And
oh,
bad for him.
Yeah, oh, no question. Especially when the caravan finally touches.
Wow.
I'm just being silly. I'm just being silly. But out of Washington, President Trump's administration contends it has broad discretion to regulate press access to the White House as it fends off a legal challenge from CNN and other outlets over the revocation of journalist Jim Acosta's hard pass. In a legal filing ahead of today's hearing on CNN's request for a temporary restraining order to restore Acosta's access, the government argues it was lawful to punish Acosta for his behavior during a contentious Trump press conference last week. If he didn't start out so combative, I mean, dude is ready to just fight all the time. I'm like, man, he just fights all the time.
I'm going to go out on a limb and just say that he's going to get his credentials back. And it's hard to take away a press pass, you know.
Well.
At that level, you know.
I know, for something like this.
At that level, I mean, nice try, but, you know.
Well, you know, here's the irony to me. When that, the man at in Pennsylvania Avenue always loved being in the media and on the media.
Yeah, because he was controlling it.
And now he.
No, he can't.
Oh, he's still controlling
he's
it.
He's trying.
Yeah, he's
control
still
the narrative,
he's still,
I should say.
He's still controlling it.
Trying to control the narrative.
Well, people still did stories about him. They did negative stories about him.
Well, catch and kill. He paid to sort of catch some of those stories, remember?
He did.
That's why that's partially why he's in trouble
now. Right. He has strange bedfellows.
Yeah. Speaking of which, he's going to court for that in New York.
Right. There's so much. No wonder he's can't sleep. Act in the pool, as the saying would go up in here. Anyway, the White House explains for why it seized Acosta's hard pass, which grants reporters as needed access to the 18-acre complex, have shifted over the last week. Acosta has repeatedly clashed with Trump and Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders in briefings over the last 2 years. But, you know, if this is a democracy, that's how it goes. You know, that's how it goes. And he's not the only president to clash with the press. I think all of them have their little battles. Seems that way to me. But that, you know, that's how it is sometimes. And, you know, we'll have to see how that one turns out. I don't know. But I'll tell you, another one I'm watching like a hawk is the treatment of the women journalists. You know, April Ryan has been on this show about 3 or 4 times over the years. That's just like, oh, no, please don't beat on April. She's a hardworking sister. She's covered all those presidents and been through all
so
that
if he's
stuff.
Having a tough time now. What's he going to do now that he no longer has the Republican cover?
Well, I can't say he'll be nice. I can't see it. I just can't see it.
Because all along, what
I think
this
he'll go
about.
deeper into this. You know, I'm just fearful that he would get
crazy.
He would get so whacked out of this. You know, they need to put some bumpers in his room. Mm-hmm. You know, like they put in a baby crib.
Yeah.
You know, to keep baby from bumping his head.
Yeah.
They need to put some bumpers in there. Because I just feel like he could be so angry that he might call Vladimir or Kim Jong and say, young Kim, it's your boy, Donald. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I feel for the young men and women serving our country who have been deployed to the border, who will probably miss Thanksgiving and maybe even Christmas
They're
with their families.
They're going to miss a lot.
Because of a political stunt.
They're going to miss a lot.
Yeah, they're going to miss.
And the taxpayers are going to pay heavily.
We're paying for it.
Heavily for
just
it.
Just for them to go to the border and sit around.
Yeah, well. Or build fences.
Yeah, but that's not. I mean, you didn't need the National Guard for that.
We got the guest on here.
Yeah.
Because we're about to go straight political. And I'm trying to get this guest on. Howard, I know you're listening right now. I know you are.
I'm right here.
I know. I said, don't hang up. We're just talking. Anyway, we're going to come back with Howard J. Ross And this is his return, his book, Our Search for Belonging. Let's take a time out, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Life insurance is one of those subjects that makes people want to change the subject rather than admit they probably don't have enough. That's why State Farm agent Terry W. Jones focuses on how the benefits of life insurance actually live on by asking people to think in terms of life without having to sell the house, insurance, or life without having to give up college, insurance. Find out how the benefits of life insurance can live on for your family. Call State Farm agent Terry W. Jones in Nashville at 615-256-6066 or online at terrywjones.net and put the life back in life insurance.
Old Hickory Boulevard is recovering from four recent wrecks. The 440 Parkway still has a shoulder blocked from a crash near West End Avenue and the Murphy exit. The 440 is completely packed and the jam is spread to Charlotte, Thompson Lane, and 21st Avenue. I-65 is slow from the Metro down to the South Loop and onto Armory Drive. I-24 is clogged from Spring Street to the river. This traffic report is brought to you by Prince's Hot Chicken, 5814 Nolensville Pike in South Nashville. I'm AJ Rose with your on-time traffic.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is also brought to you by Integrity Dental Care at 397 Wallace Road, Southern Hills Medical Center, Building C, Suite 314. Regular dental visits are essential to make sure oral health problems from tooth decay to oral cancer are detected and treated in a timely manner. At Integrity Dental Care, your oral health is our paramount concern. We want to make sure your teeth stay healthy, function well, and look great. From regular cleanings and exams to advanced restorative treatments, all of your routine dental needs can be met at Integrity Dental Care. For more information, call 615-445-8700 or online at integritydentalcares.com. Up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
Alrighty, Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And I did tell the guest that I enjoyed the discussion last time and that I was going to bring him back. And da-da, he is back. Best-selling author Howard J. Ross is back. And he is author of the book that at the time we were discussing, Our Search for Belonging, How Our Need to Connect is Tearing Us Apart. And you could not have come up with a better title for how folks are feeling in this country right now.
Boy, I tell you, it's so true, Sharon. It's great to be back. Thanks for inviting me back. I tell you, you know, everything that we talked about the last time we were together just got put on steroids
absolutely.
As we approached this midterm, didn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Now, let me, before I get into the subject at hand, let me get your thoughts. As you saw everything mounting up, you know, the ratcheting up of things before the election and the gassing up of people and, you know, just one thing after another, stereotypes flying everywhere. And then you saw the results. Did it come out kind of sort of like you thought?
Well, yeah. I mean, I actually expected, just based on what I was seeing, and I don't claim to be, you know, a political pundit who studies the election patterns or anything, but just from watching what seemed pretty obvious in terms of the way the Senate races were set up and how few, you know, what a bad setup it was for Democrats just by chance, you know, which states were up. That didn't seem like it was, it seemed to me like it was going to be pretty impossible for the Democrats to take the Senate, and I figured it would probably end up the way it did, and the House, of course, ended up being pretty positive for Democrats. So it wasn't anything surprising, but I do think that, you know, the beginning of the real acceleration, of course, started with the Kavanaugh hearings, and I think we saw very much the kinds of things we talked about last time, Sharon, in terms of everybody getting into their camps with the Kavanaugh hearings and coming in looking for the result that they already knew they wanted, as opposed to really investigating what was going on.
Well, they certainly did get in their camps, and I've got to say that I have wondered, because I've asked the question on the show before, what are the white ladies thinking about all this stuff, the white women? Because they have been overwhelmingly for this, you know, Republican male dominance thing, and they have voted for it, and, you know, hands down, you know, a lot of them have enjoyed it. But it seems as though that the tables turn. Did you see a turning of the tables?
Well, I think there was a shifting in the midterms. I think in the election in 2016, Trump actually won a majority, as you said, but won a majority of white women. But I was just looking at the numbers, at least one set of numbers the other day around the nation, and that lead has disappeared now, and he basically broke even with white women and of course women of color. Thank goodness, voted tremendously in favor of Democrats and tilted the balance of the gender vote pretty dramatically. And once again, I think, as we saw in the Alabama senatorial election, and as we've seen a lot, I think it's women of color who are really leading the way for those of us on the left and turning these elections by coming out and not only voting in a particular direction, but a lot of them voting in that direction.
Well, and I think people were starting to feel disempowered, and then all of a sudden they were fired up. They were really fired up, and I guess isn't that the point at which, Howard, that people are just so sick of it that they just react, and, you know, they react in a strong way?
Well, yeah, and I think that this is at the heart of what a lot of people on the left don't understand about President Trump's success. And it was the fundamental flaw, I think, in the Clinton campaign. The Clinton campaign, the mantra that we heard over and over again in the Clinton campaign was most qualified candidate ever. But people don't vote based on qualifications. We vote based on how a candidate makes us feel. And in the case of Clinton, she was relatively uninspiring, even to many of her supporters, and of course had an enormous amount of baggage for a lot of people. President Trump understands this, and being a salesman, which is his greatest skill as a salesman, he knows how to sell to the old brain, to the fast brain, the emotional brain. And so he goes out and does these rallies and gets everybody all ramped up. And he did a pretty remarkable job of getting his base out to vote, which did save some of the Senate races when, I think 3 months later, most people were expecting it to be much more lackluster voting on that side of the aisle.
Now, let me remind the audience that my guest today, Howard Ross, he is a lifelong social justice advocate and the founding partner of Cook Ross Incorporated. He has consulted on the areas of corporate culture change, leadership development, and diversity and inclusion. And as well, he is a best-selling author. Maybe some of you have read his book, heard about it, Reinventing Diversity and Everyday Bias. And you also have an extensive history of working to change communities and cultures. And I'm grateful to have your opinion on my show tonight, okay?
Thanks so much, Sharon. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Now, additionally, you also have spoken at a couple dozen universities about these subject matter. And are you finding that the students, the college students, the future leaders, are they seeing some of these Generation X and Y, are they seeing some of these things and saying, man, how'd they get messed up like this? Or are they want to fix it?
Well, I think it's a both end. I think you've got three basic streams on campus. You've got people who are really incensed. I think that the voting population of folks of that age range is generally more liberal, and you see that in the voting patterns, and they generally will vote more to the left and some people are really inspired and incensed and really stimulated by and turned on by the March for Lives and what these young people are doing around gun control. I think you have that group. Then you have some who are sort of the normal population, which can go either left or right. But you also have a not insignificant number of people who are pretty cynical about the political process. Mm-hmm. And they see what we've done and how we've gotten this political process, which basically feels a little bit like gorillas in a cage throwing their dung at each other, you know, I mean, and they say, I don't want any part of this. And my vote doesn't count anyway. And I think that there have been some suspicion, there's been some voter suppression strategies being used to encourage students to say their vote, but think that their vote doesn't matter anyway. Yeah. So the vote is still pretty disappointing of that age group.
Yeah, it really was. It was surprising. I mean, considering mm-hmm. that you had seen the Parkland students and others, you know, have been able to do some of the amazing things that they have been able to do, and then that didn't translate into the vote like you thought it would. I don't know. Are they only seeming to be concerned about the presidential and not realize politics are local?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, as I said, you know, we know that this happens at midterms anyway. Young people rarely vote in midterms, and I think the numbers this time were higher than usual. And we don't want to buy into the narrative, the false narrative that Trump is trying to create, which is that this was not a bad election for Republicans. You know, when you look at the final totals of what's happened in the House of Representatives, mm-hmm. there was definitely a wave election in the House of Representatives, almost 40 seats that were turned. Mm-hmm. And as I said before, and the only reason it didn't happen in the Democratic side was because it was virtually impossible, given how few seats the Democrats really had available to try to turn.
Exactly.
But we definitely have to look. I mean, I think that when we look at the percentage of people who vote in our country in general, it's an embarrassment.
Yeah.
I mean, if we have 53% of our people voting, it's a lot. We're supposedly the greatest democracy in the world, and only half the people vote.
Right.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's an embarrassment.
Well, it is, and plus one. You know, it's such a small number, and then you're going to try to block them? I mean, what in the world? That just seems so insane.
I mean, this is the other thing, and this gets back to, you know, heart of what we talk about in the book, which uh-huh. is, you know, we push the party over country, and the notion that people can look at some of these voter suppression strategies. I mean, you know, voting machines showing up in the morning in black communities in Georgia with no plugs.
Right.
You know, voter people being taken off the voter rolls with not enough time to even go to court and get them mm-hmm. back on again. I mean, mm-hmm. and then not to mention the fact that having the person who was managing the whole voting system in mm-hmm. the state of Georgia be one of the candidates who was running in an election,
that
which is
so
just
crazy.
clearly unethical. So I mean, we've got real serious problems, and we have two completely different realities. Because if you talk to people on the Republican side, all they talk about is voter fraud,
right.
which happens occasionally, but pretty minimally,
yeah.
Statistically. There are people who study this, but it doesn't stop people from believing it's true.
Exactly.
I mean, we look at what's going on in Florida right now as a great example. You know, all this, the press, it keeps tweeting things out about this, but there's no evidence behind anything he's saying. He just says it.
None.
No.
And he is just absolutely, you know, every time his imagination says, send it out there, he sends it out, and these people, I cannot believe they believe this stuff. You know, so I'm like, man, it's just unbelievable to know that they actually believe it. Or are they just lying to themselves?
Well, my experience, as you know, because we talked about this, I've interviewed over 100 people now who voted for President Trump, you know, in the research for the book. And my experience is that there are different categories. You know, that there are some people who are just true believers,
yes.
who just believe that everything put out by the media is a lie,
yeah.
that it's all a deep state conspiracy to try to get him. I mean, it's pretty wingnut stuff, but it's nonetheless a certain percentage who are out there.
Uh-huh.
Then you've got a far larger percentage who are not necessarily, you know, bad people or anything like that. You know, a lot of them are really good people who just believe that corruption is there in government in general, and they don't believe some of the messaging about President Trump. And of course, once you vote for somebody, there's some part of all of our psyches. And this happens on the left as well. You saw, you see this with people explaining away Hillary Clinton's comment a couple weeks ago about how Monica Lewinsky wasn't abused because she was an adult, which is a ridiculous comment on the face value. She was a 22-year-old intern who was preyed upon by a man 25 years older in the most powerful position of the world. It's classic sexual harassment, you know. And yet, you know, people explain away Hillary's comment because it doesn't serve our narrative on the left. And so I think the ability to explain away facts that don't go along with our conversation is human. I mean, John Kenneth Galbraith, the great economist, once said, most human beings give a strongly held point of view and evidence to the contrary will quickly go about refuting the evidence.
Now, I want to go into chapter 4 in your book. The chapter is Power, Privilege, Race, and Belonging. And can you tell the audience about this power and privilege? Because some people are still in denial.
Yeah, I think this is one of the areas where I think that we have real misunderstandings in what we're talking about. When people talk about white supremacy, white privilege, or male privilege, and you know, for those people who don't know, I'm a white man, and you know, for people who talk about these things, a lot of times people hear these as accusations against us as individuals, like you, Howard Ross, have white privilege, or you know, you, John Smith, are a white supremacist or something like that. And of course, there are people who act inappropriately and who are white supremacists. But the bigger issue and what we address, you know, what we're talking about here is the system that's in place, and that there's a system of place in place that gives certain people privileges that other people don't have. So an example, and I know I'm singing to the choir talking to you, Sharon, but you know, for people who are listening out there, as an example, I have four sons, the youngest of whom is 24 years old. They've all gotten their driver's licenses. I never had to even consider having a conversation with any of them about driving while white. I never had to have a conversation with them. I never had a concern ever that they were going to be shot by a police officer if they got stopped. I had a concern that they might get a ticket and that their insurance rates might go up or that they might hurt themselves by not driving safely, of course. But I never had to worry about that a police officer would beat them or shoot them or hurt them.
Right.
Every African-American parent I know who has had children has had that talk with them. In fact, the NAACP even has a booklet called Driving While Black. You know, every single one of my friends who have kids have had to have that talk. You know, keep your eyes, you know, make eye contact, but not too direct eye contact. Keep your hands visible. Move very slowly. Ask permission before you do anything.
Yeah.
You know, be respectful. All of that stuff. But that's just a single example, but there are 100 we could cite that there are things that are required of women and of people of color.
I mean, when you look at these things, then that's just some of it. That's not all.
Well, even when you look at, I mean, even when you think about Timothy McVeigh, you know, and Terry Nichols, you know, it's not like people described them as Christian terrorists or white male terrorists. They were just, you know, they were just terrorists, you know. But as soon as 9/11 happens, they're Muslim terrorists, like one word. And so I think that there is a tendency when people are in an out group, a smaller out group, for us to pay more attention to group.
Absolutely. Now, when we come back, I want to talk about Chapter 5 and the social brain. And I build this under the heading of political segregation, but it all just falls into place. So I tell the audience I didn't do a false title. we're sliding it in the discussion. I just want to lay a little groundwork.
Right. Good enough.
My guest is Howard J. Ross. He is a longtime social justice advocate and an author, and we're going to take a time out and we'll be right back.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.
Want to give your opinion today? The phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810.
What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is also brought to you by Integrity Dental Care at 397 Wallace Road, Southern Hills Medical Center, Building C, Suite 314. Regular dental visits are essential to make sure oral health problems from tooth decay to oral cancer are detected and treated in a timely manner. At Integrity Dental Care, your oral health is our paramount concern. We want to make sure your teeth stay healthy, function well, and and look great. From regular cleanings and exams to advanced restorative treatments, all of your routine dental needs can be met at Integrity Dental Care. For more information, call 615-445-8700 or online at integritydentalcares.com.
This is the last weekend before Thanksgiving, and we're going to play some, well, Thanksgiving blues.
No shame in my game. Everybody knows Sweet Angel is my name, and that's what I do.
That's Sweet Angel, and she's not talking turkey this weekend. Join me, Rogene Bailey, the happiest turkey in America, for Blues Time in the City, where we give you the blues without giving you the blues this weekend right here.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Catch Blues Time in the City Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on Jazzy 88.
Keep up with the guests and topics on What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. Friend us on Facebook and Twitter. Search under Sharon Kay's 411.
To speak with Sharon or our guest, the phone lines are open. Give us a call at 329-8810, 329-8810. Here again, Sharon Kay.
All right, in Nashville, Sharon Kay is in the house. Mighty glad to be on Jazzy 88 WFSK Historic Fisk University. And What's the 411 with Sharon Kay is brought to you by Terry W. Jones, independent agent, State Farm Insurance. Also brought to you by Integrity Dental Care and Mount Zion Baptist Church. We thank you so very much for supporting What's the 411. And Howard J. Ross is my guest this evening, and we're having an excellent discussion on his book and other headlines of the day. Now, let me back up to something you said right before the break, and then before I go back into one of the chapters. It has become clear to me that as long as Democrats always are led to feel guilty for not being the one to apologize, to be the one to bend, be the one to, I mean, because Republicans don't do that, okay? They do not do it. So we always have to be the ones. Like, you know, you made the comment about Hillary Clinton and we shouldn't defend that. Well, how, I mean, okay, in a perfect world or in a better place, that might be the case. But we are dealing with people who defend insanity. And they have been in control. They have been in control in our country for some years now. So I mean, I'm just like, the Democrats always have to be the one to, you know, throw the gauntlet down. Okay, we'll say we're sorry. We'll be the one, and the rest of these people just act a complete fool. So I mean, I don't know if I feel that way anymore, Howard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, I mean, it's a dilemma. There's no question about it. I mean, it gets back to Michelle Obama's, you know, famous comment that when they go low, we go high. You know, it's a difficult challenge, and I certainly don't claim to have the answer to it, Sharon. Yeah, but I do think it's a really existential challenge for us, because on one hand, you know, are we going to be have situational ethics, which is what we tend to see now among a lot of conservatives? You know, that we justify anything if it means winning, and certainly President Trump is the epitome of that. He clearly is completely amoral. I mean, it's all about winning and whatever he has to say or whatever lie he needs to tell to win. Or are we going to be more deontological? Are we going to have a set of values that guide us? And I think that it's understandable to feel like, well, you know, if they're going to be horrible, then we've got to be horrible back. Yeah. And you know, there's some challenge. There's some understandable validity of that conversation. But on the other hand, if we lose who we are in the context of winning, then what have we won? Yeah. And I think that for me, it's more appropriate to speak out strongly.
Sure.
But one can speak out really. I mean, I post all the time when I have objections to something that's going on, almost daily objections to things that President Trump does. But I try to avoid calling people names. I try to avoid getting into that kind of nasty personal thing. And I've been able to engage with a lot of people on the right in very constructive dialogue, some of whom I've been able to convince to change their minds about things because I have avoided that.
Yeah.
And I think there are people on the right who want to have those conversations too, by the way. I think there are a lot of people on the right who don't like all that nastiness and bitterness and name-calling either.
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, I think to some it shows a sign of just absolute weakness. And, you know, that is what, not so much about thinking about costs and elections, but that is what is keeping, you know, the perception of being so weak, you know, like that was the perception of Barack Obama. But I bet you if Barack Obama had opportunities to do things that, you know, I'm sure if he wanted to go out in the back and do a beat down, he could probably do it. I mean, I'm just saying that, but he just had constraint. He did not act on his emotions.
But let's also not slip into the notion that Barack Obama failed at what he was doing. Barack Obama was incredibly successful in my mind. I mean, he didn't get done some things he wanted to get done because Republicans dug in and they literally said no to everything he wanted to do. But he remained popular in the country. His popularity ratings when he left office were over 60%.
He generally
kept the country from getting into the kind of recrimination that we're seeing now. There was, you know, the level of hate was definitely less during the Obama administration. I mean, even while it was focused on him, it didn't because Obama probably has, from the standpoint of psychology, probably has the strongest, like the lowest center of gravity of any president that we've seen in our lifetimes. I mean, they couldn't get to him, and it made them crazy. You know, he would like do that flip thing off the shoulder, and because his sense of self is so strong that they couldn't get to him.
Yes.
Where with Trump, what you see is somebody who has deep, deep insecurities and ego insufficiency, and has to prove himself and can't admit that he even made a mistake.
Absolutely. That, now we can definitely high five on that one right now. Now in this chapter, the social brain, you say we're wired for belonging. What do you mean? And tell us about chapter 5.
Well, I mean, first of all, we'd say that we tend to, you know, that we live in this great myth in American culture, particularly because we're the land of individualism. You know, we pride ourselves as being individuals. And the reality is that we know that starting from infancy, we're trained to connect with people. You know, if you think about it, the most vulnerable time of a human being's existence is a newborn baby. And we depend on our parents for our survival longer than any other species on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
The first imprint that we get as young children is I exist because you exist. If mom or dad isn't there, grandma, grandpa, whoever's taking care of us isn't there, we'll die.
Mm-hmm.
We'll die. So we have it linked very deeply in us. And there's been all kinds of academic research about this. You know, for example, there's some researchers at UCLA and Purdue universities who created this experiment they call it Cyberball. And basically the way it works is that somebody sits on a computer and they have a character on the computer who's one of three characters playing catch with the ball. And the ball goes back and forth between these three characters. And then at some point, the computer is programmed so that the other two characters, rather than the one who's being controlled by the person who's being tested, the other two characters just throw the ball back and forth to each other and ignore the third character.
Mm.
And they do brain scans of people while they're doing this. And just being let out of this fake game on the computer triggers activity in the same regions of the brain associated with physical pain.
Mm.
So we hate to be excluded. This is where what some people are now calling FOMO, fear of missing out, comes from.
Mm.
You know, you want to be part of a group. And we know that it can both work positively and negatively. So, for example, it can help us in a positive, affirmative way. It can also help eliminate physical pain. One experiment, they do the experiment where they take people and they put their hands in ice water, which creates pain, but it doesn't hurt you. So in other words, you feel pain from the ice water, but it doesn't cause any damage to you. And so it's a great way to do testing around pain because you're not causing any physical damage. And then what they do is they do that experiment when people are by themselves, when they're just sitting with a complete stranger, and when they're sitting with somebody who they really care about. And the level of pain that people report is less even when they're sitting with a complete stranger, but dramatically less when they're sitting with somebody who they really care about. We actually feel less pain when we're with people who we love. Similarly, they do another experiment where they ask people to estimate how hard it will be to climb a hill by themselves, and then again with somebody who they don't know and somebody who they love. And again, we estimate it's much harder to climb a hill by ourselves, mm-hmm. and down the line, much, much easier when we're with somebody we love. So we know that this affects our psychology in very visceral ways.
How does that work when you're like in a large crowd or, you know, in some, you know, like, for example, the shootings, the mass shootings, yeah. and scenes of that nature? How does that impact that?
Well, what tends to happen is we tend to go along with the group that we feel like we need to belong to. Everybody who's listening has probably had a time when you've gone out to dinner and you said to yourself, I'm not going to have anything to drink tonight until everybody else got a drink. And then all of a sudden you said, what the hell, I'll have a drink. There's a natural tendency to want to go along with the group.
Yes.
And I think what we see sometimes in these, not so much in mass shootings, but in genocide, you know, when we look at Nazi Germany, when we look at what happened in Rwanda, you know, as you know, one of the people I interviewed in the book is a friend of mine who's a Rwandan refugee. Uh-huh. He talks about, you know, what happened with the genocide in Rwanda, that we tend to think, I know I grew up having ancestors who were Holocaust victims. They were killed in the Holocaust. I grew up thinking when I was a little kid, well, Germans must be bad people. And it wasn't until I was adult that I realized it wasn't that Germans were bad people. It's just what happened was madness took over that society. And the normative structure of that society became genocide. Just like in the American South, right where you are in Tennessee, ministers would go to church on Sunday morning and preach, love thy neighbor as thyself, and go home and beat their slaves before lunch. And that would be normal.
Right.
And so normalcy has immense power on human beings because we want to fit in, we want to go along with the group, but it could also lead us to behaviors that are completely inconsistent sometimes with our personal values.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that kind of crosses at this intersection where I'm going, and, you know, I hear my music, and that means I got to talk fast. the Chapter 6, Divinity, Division and Belonging. This weekend is the 40th anniversary of Jonestown.
Wow.
And, you know, that whole mass murder suicide religion. So,
a perfect example of what I was just talking about.
Well, that's why perfect I was example. Going to that,
yeah.
that chapter.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, this is it. This is what you're
that's
saying
right.
in this chapter. So give us the overview of Chapter 6.
Well, I think just very quickly, because we're running out of time, religion has now gone from being a set of beliefs to being an identity.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really important distinction that you can, you know, it's one thing to have a set of beliefs which are guiding you, but we can see in evangelicals who voted for President Trump, for example, that his behavior is completely inconsistent with their beliefs, but they voted for him anyway because they identified with him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an important distinction in the same sense as ISIS identifies as being Muslim, but they don't act Muslim because the things that they do are in violation of the Quran.
Mm.
The Westboro Baptist Church says that they're Christian, but they don't act Christian.
Mm.
You know, and so I think that we have to distinguish between when we actually are following a set of beliefs versus when we just say we're a part of that group.
And these people followed it to the bitter end, to the drinking of the Kool-Aid, to the bitter end.
Yeah. And look, you know, I have friends of mine who blindly, you know, excuse away Minister Farrakhan's anti-Semitism in the same way. No, I have a lot of respect for the work that Minister Farrakhan has done in the African-American community and some of the things that the nation has done. I mean, they deserve praise for that, and they deserve to be lauded for that. But he's also a bigot where it comes to anti-Semitism, and he says horrible and hateful things about Jews, and yet a lot of people are afraid to criticize him because, you know, they think criticizing him for that means they have to negate the good things he did.
Right.
I believe you have to hold people accountable on both sides.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know, maybe he'll get to a point in his life where he'll regret, you know, making those hateful statements. I don't know.
Look, and I want to acknowledge, too, that there are, for those who might, you know, be offended by what I said, that I know very well that there are a lot of Jews who make racist comments and statements, and I fight against them with the same energy. So it's just, you know, we have to start moving towards civility as a society, or we're going to be serious more trouble than we are.
Yeah, we are, and that's, you know, that in lies the problem right there.
Yeah.
And I hope that the correction, you know, the pendulum is swinging so far and so wide. I hope that, you know, we learn quickly from our mistakes and swing it back in, because generations are certainly watching us. And, you know, I say this all the time on the show, Howard, and I just want to remind the grown people out there, when you're going to the nursing home, these will be the people who will be feeding you, changing your poopy diety, and combing your hair. So if you want to teach them how to be completely crazy, okay, good luck in the nursing home. Good luck. Because, I mean, if you just think about it, who's going to be there turning them over in the bed and all that? Who's going to be doing it?
And you know that when we get in those nursing homes, we're going to be stuck in a room with somebody who voted for a different candidate than us, too. So we better get used to learning how to talk.
That's how God gets you.
That's right. It's karma. That's karma.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, Howard, I'm keeping you on my numbers. So many people.
Well, Sharon, I'd love to come back anytime.
Oh, you know it. Because this is my wheelhouse. This is my wheelhouse. I talk about this stuff all the time. This is the show that's not afraid to do it. And we're happy to have you, to hear from you always. And tell the audience how to keep up with you and find your books.
Okay, great. The book, Our Search for Belonging, is available on any standard bookselling website. You can get it there in a lot of bookstores as well. If they want to reach me, the best way to reach me is Howard at Udarta, UDARTA.com. Howard at Udarta, UDARTA.com.
What is
my email address? That's just the name of our new consulting company. We sold Cook Ross recently, and so
really?
We've got a little, you know, a small company just to continue to do our work.
Oh, wow.
So people can easily reach me there.
All right, excellent. Howard, thank you so much. And I wish you blessed holidays and give your family my love, okay?
Thank you so much, Sharon. Lots of love to you as
okay,
well.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Oh, that was now. Howard J. Ross, a longtime social justice advocate and author, best-selling author, and, you know, we'll be checking back in again with him. It's good to have good conversations with good people because you never know who's listening and who's learning, honey. That's really, at the end of the day, that's the only way things change is going to come. That is all Nashville that we have for you today. You all have the very best of the best. And don't forget, who loves you?
You've been listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station and its management.
You're listening to What's the 411 with Sharon Kay.